Nearly 300,000 men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer this year. There'll be over 35,000 deaths from the disease. This is the People's Pharmacy with Terry and Joe Graydon.
Prostate cancer doesn't get as much attention as breast cancer, although the numbers are surprisingly similar. Men may be a little less proactive than women when it comes to screening and follow-up. What's the best practice?
Both diagnosis and treatment have improved dramatically in recent years. Two experts are standing by to explain the latest developments.
Our lines are open for your questions, 888-472-3366.
Coming up on the People's Pharmacy, what you need to know about prostate cancer.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines, bird flu is no longer limited to birds. The H5N1 strain of influenza was first detected in barnyard geese and chickens in the late 1990s. Since then, it has spread. Millions of chickens have been killed to try to slow the spread of the virus. However, wild birds have carried it around the world, and the virus also infects mammals, including mink, polar bears, and sea lions. The latest discovery is that dairy cattle in Texas, Michigan, Ohio, South Dakota, New Mexico, Kansas, Idaho, Texas, and North Carolina have also been infected. Most worrisome, a farm worker in Texas has come down with the H5N1 virus, presumably from the cattle he was tending. Scientists don't yet know if the virus is spreading from cow to cow. It doesn't appear to spread directly from one person to another yet. If it does, that could set off a new flu epidemic. People are concerned about eating meat or drinking milk from infected cattle. Experts believe that pasteurized milk and well-cooked meat should be safe for consumption, even if they came from an infected animal.
According to the cybersecurity firm BrandShield, over 250 websites have been selling fake weight loss medications. These GLP-1 agonists are well known by their brand names, Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, and Zepbound. Such drugs have become extremely successful in a very short period of time. With so much money at stake, it's hardly surprising that bogus drug products would start to show up in countries such as the U.S., Britain, and Belgium. Another drug that's attracting counterfeiters is botulinum toxin, better known as Botox. People in 9 states have been harmed as a result of counterfeit products. Botulinum toxin injections are used to treat wrinkles. The Illinois Department of Public Health warns healthcare workers to be alert for cases of botulism from unsanctioned counterfeit injections. Symptoms include blurred vision, fatigue, hoarse voice, or difficulty swallowing.
Counterfeiting becomes a bigger problem when drugs are in short supply. That's been a problem with weight loss medications. Drug shortages have reached an all-time high in the first few months of 2024. According to information from the American Society of Health System Pharmacists and the Utah Drug Information Service, 323 important medicines are in active shortage. These include critical chemotherapy drugs, as well as antibiotics like amoxicillin or emergency injections such as epinephrine. Drug shortages have been a problem for decades, and no one has a plan to address chronic drug shortages.
Where do you store potentially hazardous chemicals? Many people keep paint, solvents, pesticides, gasoline, chainsaws, or leaf blowers, lawn care products, and other such equipment and chemicals in their garages. Now a study from Michigan indicates that this can raise the risk of ALS. This degenerative nerve disease robs people of the ability to move their muscles, ultimately including the diaphragm. The increased risk is modest, but it's stronger for garages attached to the house. Cold weather increases airflow through the garage into the house and makes the problem worse. It would be wise to store woodworking supplies, strong pesticides, and lawn care products outside the home in a well-ventilated space.
Billions of years ago, Mother Nature developed her own way of fighting pathogenic bacteria. Bacteriophages, or phages for short, are viruses that attack specific bacteria. Scientists have long wondered how phages work to overcome bacterial infections. A new study in Science reveals how a phage, dubbed PP7, infects Pseudomonas aeruginosa. The phage targets a cylindrical extension from the surface of the bacteria called a pilus. The pili are critical for P. aeruginosa to form biofilms and infect host cells. Where the phage attaches, the pilus retracts into the cell, admits the phage, and snaps off. The scientists believe this will help address the problem of multi-drug-resistant bacteria. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week. Welcome to the People's Pharmacy. I'm Terry Graydon. I'm a medical anthropologist.
And I'm Joe Graydon. I'm a pharmacologist. Today, our lines are open for your calls and questions about prostate cancer. This is the leading cause of cancer diagnosis in men, with nearly 300,000 cases identified each year. That's roughly comparable to the number of women diagnosed with breast cancer annually. Prostate cancer is the second most common cause of cancer mortality in men, accounting for approximately 35,000 deaths a year.
That's why we're focusing on new approaches to both diagnosis and treatment of prostate cancer today. Joining us in the studio, we have two physicians who are dedicating their careers to treating patients with prostate cancer. Dr. Andrew Armstrong is professor of medicine, surgery, pharmacology, and cancer biology at Duke University. He's director of research at the Duke Cancer Institute Center for Prostate and Urologic Cancers in the divisions of medical oncology and urology at Duke University. Welcome, Dr. Armstrong.
Joe and Terry, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be with you today.
And Dr. Bridget Kuntz is also here. She is an affiliate teaching professor at East Carolina University Brody School of Medicine. She has served as medical director of the Duke Regional Radiation Oncology and Duke Cancer Clinics of North Durham, and she was the inaugural director of radiation oncology for the Duke Center for Prostate Cancer. Later this summer, she will join Advent Health Cancer Institute in Orlando, Florida, as director for radiation oncology. Welcome, Dr. Kuntz.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here today and talk with your listeners.
The prostate cancer statistics don't really tell the whole story. Prostate cancer has been in the news lately because of a few very prominent patients. Last December, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin was hospitalized due to complications from a prostatectomy. People were taken by surprise because he hadn't told his subordinates he'd be undergoing prostate cancer surgery. More recently, Dr. Francis Collins, former director of the National Institutes of Health, announced that he too will undergo prostatectomy to treat an aggressive prostate cancer. And O.J. Simpson has just died of metastatic prostate cancer.
Now, I want to share something personal with you, our listeners. In the spirit of full disclosure, I would like to share that 10 years ago, like Dr. Collins, an MRI revealed significant prostate cancer for me. A subsequent biopsy revealed aggressive prostate cancer, a Gleason score of 9, which is not a good piece of news to receive. I had a lot of emotional reactions. I thought my life was going to be over very shortly. I was scheduled for surgery. I was on the runway, so to speak. That plane was getting ready to take off when a multidisciplinary team showed up in a room at Duke. And I got to meet Dr. Kuntz and Dr. Armstrong because they were running a clinical trial. And I want to thank both of you because I'm well. 10 years later, I'm just doing great. My life is very full. And I'm in large measure here, I think, thanks to both of you. We are going to talk about that clinical trial, and we'd like to start right there because we're focusing on early diagnosis and treatment of prostate cancer and how it can make a difference in people's lives. Our lines are open for your stories and your comments. The number, Terry?
The number is 888-472-3366. We can also accept email. That's radio@peoplespharmacy.com. So that number, 888-472-3366.
So let's start with you, Dr. Kuntz. Tell us about this clinical trial. You were the, I think, principal investigator, the PI.
Yes. Yes, that's right. So as you know, this study looked at men who had been diagnosed with aggressive prostate cancer, and the traditional treatment for someone who was going to undergo radiotherapy as an alternative to surgery was to have long-term hormone deprivation therapy. And there's a lot of data supporting long-term ADT.
And what's long-term?
Long-term was about at least 24 months. Right now, I'd still say that doctors are recommending 18 months. So this trial looked at shortening the course of hormone deprivation to 6 months by using a, at the time, novel combination of drugs. And it was a very novel at the time. We were nervous about would we be under-treating men who were willing to undergo the trial, but we had just amazing results.
Well, let's turn to you, Dr. Armstrong. What were the, what were the two drugs?
The first drug was a form of androgen deprivation therapy, which if you go back to 1941, that discovery was the first Nobel Prize in cancer.
And it was?
Well, the drug was Lupron, but many forms of androgen deprivation therapy.
And I got Firmagon as my drug of choice. The other drug was quite exciting.
The other drug is a mouthful. It's called abiraterone. It used to be called Zytiga. It's now generic. And the listeners should understand that androgens, testosterone in the body, can come from the testicles, but they can also come from other organs like the adrenal glands. And some cancers can manufacture androgens themselves. And so abiraterone blocks the other sources that allow cancer cells to persist and survive radiotherapy. And so we combined these two and had great success.
I would like to ask why it's so important to deprive the body of androgen.
So in the setting of radiation, the androgen receptor binds to testosterone and allows cancer cells to resist radiation, to repair their DNA and survive the double strand breaks in the DNA caused by radiation. And when you block that process, the cancer cells selectively fall apart and die.
So these were all men like me with very aggressive prostate cancer, not a good prognosis. Dr. Kuntz, what were the results of the trial?
So obviously the first endpoint that we cared about was whether we were able to control the cancer. And we've just reported now with 5-year follow-up on these patients that only one out of the 33 men had a PSA failure. So that result is a 97% control rate at 5 years.
Now, a PSA failure, what does that mean?
So for prostate cancer, many of the ways that we diagnose cancer involves doing a blood test for prostate-specific antigen, or PSA. When we treat prostate cancer, that blood test is a very good way of tracking whether the treatment has worked or whether the cancer has returned.
We would like to hear from you, our listeners. Give us a call, 888-472-3366. Email us, radio@peoplespharmacy.com. Have you had prostate cancer? Do you know someone who has? How well has the treatment worked? We'd like to hear your story, 888-472-3366.
Now, I'd like to ask a very basic question, which is, we've been talking about aggressive prostate cancer. Joe mentioned a Gleason score. If you read the information about Dr. Collins or Secretary Austin, you will find reference to Gleason scores. What's a Gleason score and why does it matter?
Yeah, I'll take that. So under the microscope, when you look at prostate cancer, you can see features where the cancer has disrupted the normal gland. It stops looking like the normal prostate and starts looking like cancer. And the more it looks like an aggressive, smaller cells packed tightly together invading the tissue, the higher the number. But you listeners should realize that just because it's a high number doesn't mean you have a death sentence. The patients can still have outcomes, and often when the cancer is still confined to the prostate, curative intent strategies, just like we've seen now with Joe at 10 years, can result in good news for patients. But it's one of the more important features of the cancer, in addition to the stage and the PSA level.
Dr. Kuntz.
And I just want to add that typically, as cancer physicians, we try to match the aggressiveness of the cancer to the aggressiveness of the treatment.
Oh,
so
good idea.
A lower score plus other characteristics that we take into account, like what that PSA is, if there's anything that's visible on an MRI indicating the cancer may have spread outside the prostate, that will indicate to us, do we need to do treatment at all? Or do we need to do very aggressive treatment, including multiple therapies, or something in the middle?
Well, this gets us to the whole issue of surveillance. I remember interviewing a physician a couple of decades ago who said, you know, most men will die with prostate cancer, not from prostate cancer. Don't worry, be happy. I think that thinking has changed. That is to say, we probably had a bounce of prostate cancer after the pandemic because people weren't going in to be tested. Give us a sense of what kind of tests, how often, how important it is, and have we improved our testing ability?
Yeah, I'd like to answer that. Prostate cancer is the number one survived cancer in America. So that tells you that most men live with prostate cancer and don't die of it. But it's also, as you mentioned earlier, the number two cause of death. So it's really a tale of multiple types of prostate cancers. So understanding your risk and having that multidisciplinary opinion so you can hear about all the options, including active surveillance for lower risk cancer, can really prevent the harms of cancer. So surveillance means active processes of monitoring the cancer now with multiparametric MRI, serial biopsies.
Whoa, that was a mouthful.
Big mouthful.
what is that?
So in the past, we haven't had good imaging of the prostate. And so doing untargeted biopsies of the prostate, it was like sticking random needles in your prostate. Hard to find the cancer if you can't see it. But now an MRI of the prostate is a much more accurate way to visualize where the tumor is, to put the needle exactly where the cancer is, and to more accurately classify a patient's risk, and that can better inform treatment.
We are going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to invite your calls about the latest treatments for prostate cancer. How has radiation therapy changed?
Our lines are open, 888-472-3366. If the lines are full, you can send an email, radio@peoplespharmacy.com.
That phone number again, 888-472-3366.
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon.
Thank you.
Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Terry Graydon.
And I'm Joe Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by CocoVia Dietary Supplements. The People's Pharmacy is made possible also by their Memory and Focus product, a unique formula that works to promote attention and support long-term memory. It supports five areas of brain performance. More information at CocoVia.com.
Today, our topic is advances in prostate cancer diagnosis and treatment. Our guests are Dr. Bridget Kuntz, affiliate teaching professor at East Carolina University Brody School of Medicine and future director for radiation oncology at Advent Health Cancer Institute in Orlando, Florida.
We're also talking with Dr. Andy Armstrong, professor of medicine, surgery, pharmacology, and cancer biology at Duke University. He's director of research at the Duke Cancer Institute Center for Prostate and Urologic Cancers in the divisions of medical oncology and urology at Duke University.
What do you need to know about prostate cancer? We invite you to ask your question at 888-472-3366. You can also send us email radio@peoplespharmacy.com.
Terry, I have one quick question and then we'll go to the calls.
Go ahead.
Dr. Armstrong, many urologists promote radical prostatectomy as the primary and or the only treatment for prostate cancer, especially if it's sort of confined, in quotes, whatever we mean by confined, to the prostate. Is it the best or only treatment?
Joe, this is a very common question and one of the reasons why we recommend the multidisciplinary clinic. And it's important to hear all the options because radiation therapy, which Dr. Kuntz is an expert in, can provide very similar cure rates to radical prostatectomy without the complications of surgery.
Such as?
Complications of surgery are erectile dysfunction and urinary incontinence. There's also anesthesia and blood loss. And for some older men or men with comorbidities, other health problems, that can be a barrier. Radiation also has side effects, so it's important to hear about some of the risks, although those are reduced nowadays with many approaches to make radiation safer.
Dr. Kuntz, could you tell us about the primary side effects of radiation?
Right. So radiation is using X-rays or using forms of radioactive seeds that can be put inside the prostate. So radiation side effects are related to the organs that sit next to the prostate. Radiation can cause urinary irritation, frequency. Incontinence is very rare, but there are certainly irritative symptoms that occur. Radiation can also cause bowel effects, so during radiotherapy, looser stools. One of the unique parts about radiation, however, is as the body heals, it can cause scar tissue, and that scar tissue can cause side effects that can happen months to years after radiotherapy. So infrequent, but again, irritative symptoms, bladder, bowel, and bleeding, and very rarely radiation can actually be a cause of cancer.
Let's go to the phones and talk to Johnny in Fort Worth, Texas. Johnny, welcome. Tell us what is your situation and your question.
Hello. I was diagnosed with prostate cancer with the aggressive form 5 years ago. I was given radiation therapy, and I think I took some chemo. But after that, I've been taking Lupron. I take Lupron shots I take Lupron every 4 months, and I take Lupron every 4 months, and then I take Erleada every day, four pills a day. And it causes I feel like I'm impotent, and I'm wondering. I heard what they said that the treatment may have killed the cancer after 4 months or something, after about 18 months or 24 months. And I'm wondering if this is something I can talk with my oncologist about. And I've taken the notes where you're from Duke University, and I'll talk to my doctor about listening to your show on Monday when as soon as he gets into the office, I'll send word to him.
Dr. Armstrong, how about if we respond to Johnny, and any thoughts or suggestions?
Johnny, those are great questions, and it sounds like you're doing very well. And some specific circumstances that can inform this are whether the cancer is inside the prostate or whether it's left the prostate or relapsed after local therapy, you know, either surgery or radiation. And if your disease is under good control, you're on a very potent hormonal blocker that can improve survival. Erleta or apalutamide blocks that receptor and can control the cancer for many years. And other drugs like it, enzalutamide, abiraterone, darolutamide, are very effective.
So the treatment has really changed dramatically
Absolutely.
In the last decade.
Yes.
Tell us about the prognosis over the long term. You get to see a lot of men, many of whom have pretty advanced prostate cancer. How's the new treatment making a difference for them?
Sure. So even in stage four disease, which typically has maybe less than a 30% five-year life expectancy, the five-year survival has dramatically improved because of the use of these new, what we call systemic therapies that work throughout the body to repress the cancer, to put it asleep, that lowers the PSA, kills many of the cells, but the hormone therapy alone typically doesn't cure the cancer once it's left the prostate. It can control the cancer and turn the cancer into a chronic disease, and we're seeing many more men live 5+ years because of this.
So is there anything that can take care of the prostate cancer once it's left the prostate, Dr. Kuntz?
So this is an area that in recent years we've really found a great role for radiotherapy. For localized disease, radiotherapy is a way of curing prostate cancer when it is intact in the body. And we've now looked at exploring, can we use radiotherapy either targeted through x-rays or targeted through an injectable radiopharmaceutical medication to target prostate cancers wherever they might be. And so far, the results are very promising that this we might be able to further extend. And there's limited data that suggests that for some men, they can actually go off of hormone therapy when they have limited metastatic disease and be able to have a period of time up to 5 years without having any additional therapies needed.
So Dr. Armstrong, if you could just follow up on that, because Duke was very much involved in the clinical trials that allowed for the approval from the Food and Drug Administration of this approach. Tell us a little bit more.
Sure. So there's many ways to visualize the cancer nowadays. We've moved beyond conventional imaging with CTs, bone scans, and this new PSMA PET. PSMA stands for prostate-specific membrane antigen. It's a much more sensitive prostate-specific imaging test that can visualize microscopic disease that's down to just a few millimeters throughout the body. And we can target those lesions with radiation or this new smart bomb therapy, which is a form of liquid radiation that sticks like Velcro to the tumor and can deliver smaller doses of radiation regularly to the cancer. And both of these approaches can improve outcomes in patients.
Great.
We have an email from a listener who says, my husband had brachytherapy as a treatment for prostate cancer 9 years ago with great results. However, his PSA is now going up, and it's at the point his oncologist is recommending cryotherapy as a treatment option. He has no other symptoms. In other words, no difficulty urinating, no painful urination, no blood in his urine or semen. An MRI showed no progression or evidence of cancer outside the prostate, and she would like to know if cryotherapy is a reasonable alternative.
Before you answer, Dr. Kuntz, what is brachytherapy?
So thank you for the question. It's a really important one about what happens when the first treatment is not effective and you have recurrence. Brachytherapy is a form of radiation where we put radioactive seeds into the prostate. That can be done either permanently, and those seeds give off the radiation and then lay inert for the rest of your life, or it can be a temporary form of seed implant where it goes in and we bring that seed back out using small catheters and a robot. And so to understand the story here of your husband, ma'am, the first question is whether I think an MRI is important. You might also consider a PSMA PET, as Dr. Armstrong has suggested, to ensure that there's no cancer elsewhere in the body. If it really is a local recurrence in the prostate, cryotherapy is a good choice because of the previous radiation. So it can be difficult to do surgery. additional radiation may not make the most sense, although there are some studies looking at being able to re-irradiate. And cryotherapy there's side effects. There's side effects with everything.
What is cryotherapy? Cryo sounds like cold.
It is. So it's it's almost like a form of brachytherapy, but instead of using radioactive seeds, the urologist puts in catheters that freezes the prostate. They take care to protect the urethra and the rectum, and it can kill the cancer cells and other prostate cells that are in that area. It is primarily used in the recurrent space, although it has been evaluated as an option for primary cancer as well.
And we go to Chris in Ithaca, New York. Welcome to the People's Pharmacy, Chris. And you'll need to turn your radio down, Chris, before you talk to us.
Hello, Chris. We may have to move on. Chris, can you hear us, please? Hello?
Hi.
There's
Hi.
Chris. Okay.
Yep.
Go
I'm
ahead,
here.
Please.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hello. I'm glad to hear the Duke crowd is involved. According to my friends in the medical profession, it's a great place for second opinions.
And your question is?
I hear you.
I think Chris.
Let me turn off the radio.
Yes.
Good plan. Thank you, Chris. We appreciate that.
Okay. I think we're on the air, but not in my house.
There you go.
Well, good morning.
What is your question, please?
Okay. I have had cancer of the prostate. I use the 40 treatment proton radiation. This is approximately 8 years ago, maybe 10. Recently in a year, the PSA, always monitor the PSA every year, guys. It popped up, and so I went for a checkup. And the idea was, all right, let's do a PET, CT with gallium contrast. Mm-hmm. And, of course, examines the whole thorax. Fortunately, just one lesion, as you call those tumors, in the prostate. And the question is, now what to do? Now, should there be a biopsy done, which is just a sampling of the prostate, where you've got the gallium contrast, which is the whole body, no? And then that's question number one. Question number two is, what's behind the HIFU approach? So that's question number two.
Dr. Armstrong.
Yeah, so Chris, these are important questions. And, you know, when the PSA rises, that can indicate a recurrence. We have different definitions depending on whether you've had radiation or surgery. But when it's consistently rising, that's when we do sensitive imaging like the PSMA PET that you mentioned. And just because you see a lesion doesn't mean you have to treat it. Some men can be safely observed and enjoy their survivorship without the need for therapy or hormones and can get away with often years or decades of just observation, ongoing surveillance. But for men where the PSA is rising more rapidly or where there's metastatic disease seen, we often employ different strategies like radiation to PET-positive areas or hormonal therapy, cryotherapy if it's confined. We like to confirm lesions that are seen with a biopsy to prove things. But you should understand that sometimes doing nothing can be better than doing something. So it's very individualized.
Dr. Kuntz.
I'd actually like to point out, Chris, you tell your story highlights a situation that I think, unfortunately, many men who have been diagnosed with prostate cancer do have, where their cancer has come back, a PET scan showing disease, and then the question is, what next? One of the highlights of the research that I have done with Dr. Armstrong is around not only managing the treatment, but also managing the side effects of therapy. And particularly for men facing metastatic prostate cancer, it often includes a reduction in the testosterone, ADT, which can be lifelong. There are recent studies showing that for men who have PET-positive oligometastases, so limited number of disease, we may have options like watching, starting hormone therapy, starting radiation instead of hormone therapy, or even a combination of the two. And we actually, I'm right now the national leader of a trial called the NRG-GU-011, which is looking at, I know it's a mouthful, but it is looking at, can we treat men with radiation instead of hormone therapy or in combination with hormone therapy for a short period of time and control the cancer without that lifelong testosterone deprivation that has been a traditional treatment.
Now, I do have one quick question for Dr. Armstrong, and that is this. A lot of times people will have a radical prostatectomy and the doctor will say, we got it. We got it all. You're done. And then a year later or 2 years later, PSA starts going up. And that can be a devastating situation. So I do worry sometimes about the surgeons who say, you're fine. You're grand. Get on with your life. People assume they're cured. That doesn't always happen.
It's an important question, Joe. And many surgeons, like all of us, are optimistic that they've done a great job, that visually they've eradicated the cancer and that they've gotten clear margins on the cancer. But what they can't know is the microscopic disease that may make PSA. And that's why PSA is a very good monitoring test after prostatectomy. When it goes up, some men can still have a second chance at cure with radiation.
And we go to Mike in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Hi, Mike. You're on the People's Pharmacy. What's up?
Hi. Thank you, doctor. My sister, about 10 years ago, got her aggressive breast cancer. They tested her for the BRCA2 gene mutation, and she tested positive. They tested my mother. She tested negative. So it had to have come through my father, and my father died of aggressive prostate cancer, but I hear very little about a male's risk for getting prostate cancer through that gene mutation.
Such a good question, Mike. Thank you. Dr. Armstrong.
Yeah, so, Mike, that's a really important question. The BRCA2 gene causes aggressive prostate cancer, not just ovarian and breast cancer. It's also can cause skin cancers and pancreatic cancer. So important to test yourself to understand your risks. The average risk for a man just being alive is about 1 in 9, 1 in 10 of getting prostate cancer. But BRCA2 carriers have about a 2 to 3-fold higher risk of getting cancer of the prostate, particularly more aggressive cancer. So we have new screening methods like MRI and PSAs that can help you pick this cancer up early.
We just have about a minute before the break, but Dr. Armstrong, you have given me this really cool brochure, Your Genes Matter. And people can get results just from a saliva test. And where they go is prostatecancerpromise.org. So anybody can participate, doesn't cost anything. You don't have to have your blood drawn, just a little saliva. So do you recommend this?
Yes, germline testing is now fairly universally recommended for all men with aggressive prostate cancer and anybody with a strong or suggestive family history like our listener here, Mike. And the PROMISE Registry has already enrolled 4,000 men. It's going to be open for another year and it allows free testing so that you can have the standard of care test done.
It is time for us to go to a short break. When we come back, we will be talking about support groups and you can give us a call, 888-472-3366.
You can email us, radio@peoplespharmacy.com. That number again, 888-472-3366.
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon.
Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by Cocovia Dietary Supplements. Cocovia Cardio Health is offered in both convenient capsule and powder formats, with each serving containing 500 milligrams of cocoa flavanols to support heart health. More information at cocovia.com.
Today on The People's Pharmacy, we are talking about advances in the diagnosis and treatment of prostate cancer. Dr. Andy Armstrong is here to tell you what you need to know about this condition. He's professor of medicine, surgery, pharmacology, and cancer biology at Duke University. He's director of research at the Duke Cancer Institute Center for Prostate and Urologic Cancers in the divisions of medical oncology and urology at Duke University.
We're also talking with Dr. Bridget Kuntz, affiliate teaching professor at East Carolina University Brody School of Medicine. From 2021 to 2023, she was the U.S. Chief Medical Officer for Genesis Care, a global oncology network and research organization. Starting this summer, she'll be director for radiation oncology at Advent Health Cancer Institute in Orlando. She's the senior editor of the practical handbook, Radiation Therapy Treatment Effects, an evidence-based guide to managing toxicity.
Our lines are open for you at 888-472-3366. At the moment, our lines are full, so you can email us, radio@peoplespharmacy.com. And I happen to have an email right here from Kevin. Kevin says, as previously mentioned, the primary indicator for prostate cancer is the PSA level. However, if I've been taking tamsulosin for kidney stone treatment, which can affect PSA levels, how long should I wait for the drug to clear from my system before having a PSA test?
So, Kevin, I can answer that question. You're right. The tamsulosin can, and actually some of the other drugs that are used for an enlarged prostate can change the PSA level. There's no reason to wait to have your PSA checked. It's simply a matter of understanding and letting your doctor know that you are on prostate or urinary medications, because that can affect what your normal level should be, so they can evaluate whether your PSA is within the appropriate range.
One quick question for you, Dr. Armstrong. People tend to think of the PSA as the holy grail measurement, but people can have aggressive prostate cancer and a low PSA number. So it's not the 100% foolproof test that some people believe.
That's right, Joe. As prostate cancer evolves, it can make less PSA, you know, and so having a rectal exam can be helpful. Having that MRI to visualize the cancer can be helpful. Oh. There can be a disconnect with the PSA and the tumor size and aggressiveness.
As a matter of fact, I'm glad you mentioned the rectal exam, which is no longer really part of a standard exam. Mary emailed us. She says, had my husband not had a rectal exam by his VA primary doctor, his prostate cancer diagnosis would have been delayed because his PSA was less than 2. Even so, his cancer diagnosis was aggressive, a Gleason 8-9. He was not a candidate for surgery. He had 44 days of radiation in 2020 during COVID and chemo and hormonal treatments over 2 years, and he's doing well 4 years out. So the role of the rectal exam?
Yeah, I'm glad Mary brought that up, because my clinic is full of men whose cancers were picked up early because of an astute primary care physician doing a good physical exam, which does include a rectal exam. And even though for most men the PSA is far superior to that exam, there are some exceptions to that for these low PSA-producing tumors. It's a harmless test. It can pick up bulky tumors and save some people's lives.
Let us go to Gary in Raleigh. Gary, welcome to the People's Pharmacy.
Hello.
Go ahead, please.
I have a family history of 3 members that had prostate cancer. 2 of them died of it. I am like everyone else. I'm trying to prepare for what's ahead. I'm 70 and trying to be proactive. It's almost like a woman with breast cancer trying to get screened. I take tamsulosin, but I have taken the PSA. My PSA is very low. I am going to see a urologist and have a manual check. I wonder if on an annual basis, if there is something else I should be doing.
Great question, Gary. Dr. Armstrong, what else can Gary do to prevent prostate cancer?
Sure, Gary, you ask important questions. Certainly having some genetic testing done could really reveal your personal risk, but having PSA surveillance is probably the best thing. You know, there are other tests and lifestyle choices that can possibly reduce the risk of getting aggressive prostate cancer. A healthy lifestyle, healthy body weight, a vegetable-enriched diet, you know, cruciferous vegetables, tomato products, things like that, and exercise and a healthy weight can really reduce that risk of getting aggressive prostate cancer.
Now, Gary mentioned that he'll be going in to see his doctor soon. How early should a man who has prostate cancer in his family start prostate cancer surveillance or screening or what have you, and how often?
Yeah, most national guidelines recommend a midlife PSA somewhere in the 45 to 50 range to estimate what your risk is. It's like getting a colonoscopy and figuring out if you have polyps. If you have polyps, you need to get more frequent testing. If your PSA is already elevated at that young of an age, you probably need more frequent testing. When testing should stop is also controversial. It depends on your life expectancy and your other health conditions. But when you still have more than 10 years likely to live, we recommend continued surveillance using the PSA test.
That's somewhat comparable to mammography then.
Exactly.
We have another email question. What about HIFU? And the person says, I don't know how to spell it, but what's that therapy about?
So I can take that one. Thank you for that question. You know, we talked about cryotherapy, and I think an earlier caller also asked about HIFU. So I think of HIFU as the opposite of cryotherapy. Instead of freezing the prostate, urologists heat the prostate. It stands for high intensity frequency ultrasonography. The HIFU, like cryotherapy, is particularly, I see it used in patients if their cancer recurs. There has been applied for patients who have a initial diagnosis, although it is not an appropriate therapy for a man who has a higher risk or a more aggressive cancer, because it can really only treat inside the prostate gland, and it is not able, similar to cryo, to treat the capsule or any external disease outside the prostate.
And we go back to the phones. Binghamton, New York. Matt, welcome to the People's Pharmacy.
Hi, thank you. I listen to you all the time. And fortuitously, I just had a biopsy yesterday. I'm a 72-year-old male, and I never had a proctology exam until I had a kidney stone. And the doctor said, I think we should, you know, do a... So anyway, did the biopsy yesterday and going to get the results next Friday. What questions should I be asking? Because he's already mentioned that, well, if you have it, I can do surgery to take out your prostate. And he says it's in an area where it seems like it hasn't gone outside the sac, but it's an area where he thinks all the nerves could be preserved and, you know, I wouldn't have any kinds of dysfunction. And so I'm just wondering what other questions you think I should be asking.
Thank you for a very important question, Matt. So, Dr. Kuntz, what would you say?
Yeah, so, Matt, I think good luck next week when you get your results. And I think the first step is to take some deep breaths if it's news that that you do have cancer. And I'm glad that you've thought of these questions early, because I think often in the moment, it's very scary and all of the things that you had thought about go right out of your head. I think the first step is to ask how aggressive the cancer is. As you've heard, that really makes a difference both in terms of the treatment options and in what you want to plan for in terms of the side effects of treatment. Understanding that aggressiveness, that risk category, ask about whether you need to have any additional testing to look for cancer spread outside the prostate. For Gleason's 7s, 8s, 9s, 10s, that includes typically not just an MRI, but also a PSMA PET. Ask for a second opinion. It's very appropriate to understand all of the options and hear from the other disciplines. You heard that at Duke, and in many other cancer centers, there's a multidisciplinary approach where a patient has the chance to talk to people who do surgery, radiation, medical oncology that gives hormone therapies, and sometimes actually can be an objective viewer in terms of the treatment choices. Those will help you understand what the next steps would be.
Well, I'd like to reinforce the importance of taking those deep breaths. In my case, I freaked out. I was a basket case, not just for a few days, but for weeks and weeks. And my kids said, you know, you need some support, Dad. And I ended up seeing a therapist who recommended the multidisciplinary team approach at Duke. And I hadn't even thought about that. I was like, I'm on the runway for surgery. Get out of my way. And when I had the patient support group say, no, you need to find out all of your options. And that made a huge difference. And the support group made a huge difference. So Dr. Armstrong, first respond to our caller and then perhaps the importance of support.
Well, Matt, first I hope that you get some good news and agree with Joe and Bridget on all of their approaches. You know, there are some reputable websites and support groups that can help you navigate the information overload. Prostate Cancer Foundation, American Cancer Society, the NCCN all have very patient-friendly handouts. There's books, there's brochures. The multi-D clinic can often help you distill that information into a very, you know, meaningful session where you can hear from the various doctors, medical, radiation, and urologic oncologists that can help you make a very personalized decision that's right for your values. Sometimes patients don't need treatment. That's one of the first questions that we ask is this a cancer that can be actively surveyed for many years without harming the patient? And then intervene only when the cancer needs treatment. And if treatment's needed, what are the various side effects and approaches that can provide an equivalent cure rate?
How would a man find a support group?
Well, most comprehensive cancer centers will have that and provide that resource either through their cancer survivorship or supportive care services websites. That's where, you know, you can find this through Duke. The Prostate Cancer Foundation has a support group that's national, international, and that is based on, you know, telemedicine and phone calls, and they can link you to often the networks of support groups around the country.
Here is an email from Tony in Tampa. He says, I have been dealing with prostate cancer for 21 years. I've had a radical prostatectomy, two rounds of IMRT, and Dr. Kuntz, you can explain what that is, a year of Lupron, cryosurgery. Presently, my PSA is rising slowly, doubling time every 2 years. So that is very slow. What are the prospects for tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes and CAR T for solid tumors? I take a lot of anti-inflammation supplements. Are there any negative effects of that strategy? So what's the story for Tony?
So I'll answer the IMRT, and then I think I'm going to punt this one over to Dr. Armstrong to talk about the systemic options. IMRT is is intensity modulated radiotherapy. It is the standard of care for treating prostate cancer. It is a way of delivering radiotherapy from many entry points in the body that really focuses the radiation on the prostate or whatever the target is in such a way that it minimizes the radiation to the rest of the body. It's a very tightly focused, delivered treatment.
And just briefly, speaking of radiation, when people hear radiation, they freak. I did. But in point of fact, it can be incredibly effective and may even cause cancer cells to die outside of the area of radiation. You had a name for that, Dr. Armstrong.
The abscopal effect.
How does that work?
Well, it's mostly been observed in cancer models rather than people. But there is a theory that if you induce DNA damage and a danger signal, inflammation can then attack distant sites.
And presumably the immune system is active as well.
Yes, that's mostly been observed in other cancers with immunotherapies in conjunction with the radiation, but it's a hopeful thing that we're working on. Immunotherapy is one of the great breakthroughs of all cancer, and we hope that prostate cancer will see that in the next decade.
And that's what Tony wants to know about. I mean, he's been living with this for 21 years. What does the future hold for him?
Yeah, I'd like to make 2 points for Tony. One is that your PSA doubling time being very low, very slow, in other words, indicates that you may not need any therapy. And that patients with doubling times over a year often die of other causes, not their cancer, which is great news. But for men with aggressive cancer, one of the major areas of research is immune therapy. These are drugs that boost the immune system to get around how the cancer evades the immune system. Cancer, prostate cancer particularly, is sneaky. It doesn't respond to traditional checkpoint inhibitors, doesn't respond to the traditional forms of immune therapy. And so clinical trials at Duke through many cancer centers are really doing an all-hands-on-deck approach. CAR T-cells are one of the approaches that have not yet shown success, but there's an iterative approach to research of trial and error where we're very hopeful for immune therapies going forward.
We are getting close to the end of our time together, and I want to ask about O.J. Simpson. I never thought I'd say that, but poor O.J. Simpson recently died. He died of prostate cancer. Black men are at higher risk. Why? Do we know?
Well, black men face many uphill battles, both from the time they're diagnosed, like getting into the healthcare system, being screened, interacting with healthcare professionals and the structures of our healthcare system. So there's a disparity right from the beginning. Black men are more likely to be exposed to environmental toxins or not to be screened properly or have an MRI. And so there's many disparities in just the structure of healthcare that could be improved. For in the VA, we don't see the same disparity when there's equal access to care. So I think ensuring equal access to prostate screening, early detection, and cure would solve that.
We have about 30 seconds left. Your hope for the future?
My hope for the future is that those disparities go away, that we see that all men can have access to good health care, that they are getting screened, that their cancers can be detected early, because as I mentioned, prostate cancer can be cured when caught early. Patients like OJ who face systemic disease have a life-threatening disease, and black men have a 2- to 3-fold higher risk of mortality.
That is all the time we have today. We want to thank you for listening and for sharing your stories and questions. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all of them. There's still a lot of good questions on the boards, but there we are. We're out of time.
The People's Pharmacy is a co-production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, with The People's Pharmacy.
Lynn Siegel produced today's show. Pamela Alberta and Ayasi Chinplu provided technical assistance. Al Wadarski engineered. The People's Pharmacy theme music is by B.J. Lederman.
Thanks to our guest today, Dr. Andrew Armstrong, professor of medicine, surgery, pharmacology, and cancer biology, as well as director of research at the Duke Cancer Institute Center for Prostate and Urologic Cancers.
Thanks also to Dr. Bridget Kuntz, affiliate teaching professor at the East Carolina University Brody School of Medicine. She'll soon join Advent Health Cancer Institute in Orlando, Florida, as its director of radiation oncology.
The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by Cocovia Dietary Supplements, cocoflavanol supplements that support cognitive and cardiovascular health, made with a proven concentrated flavanol extract. More information at cocovia.com.
Today's show is number 1382. You can find it online at peoplespharmacy.com. You could subscribe to our podcast through your favorite podcast provider. We post the show on our website on Monday morning. That's where you can share further thoughts about this show. Email us, radio@peoplespharmacy.com.
If you go to peoplespharmacy.com, you can sign up for our free online newsletter. It's an easy way to stay on top of breaking health news. By subscribing to our newsletter, you'll also have regular access to our weekly podcast and find out ahead of time which topics will be covered. And if you'd like to find out about that saliva test, just go to prostatecancerpromise.org. In Durham, North Carolina, I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. Thank you for listening. Please join us again next week.